This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 5, Adjectives and Adverbs.
In this lecture, we want to consider two features of the Greek language as far as the grammar is concerned that at first glance might seem straightforward and even relatively unimportant, but contribute to the makeup of the language, contribute to our understanding of how the language works, and our understanding of the Greek text of the New Testament, and that is adjectives and adverbs. Now, just by way of illustration, the most common usage of adjectives and adverbs, if we can return to this simple illustration, is that the subject and direct object of a sentence, and there could be an indirect object, but just to use this simple sentence, the subject and direct object would be the substantives or nouns of the sentence, and then the verb would communicate the goings-ons or the activities or the actions or the states that are communicated by the sentence. Adjectives tend to modify the substantives in the sentence. We'll see they can do more than that, but that's one common function, that the adjective would function to modify the nouns or the substantives in a sentence or a clause. It doesn't have to be the main sentence. In other words, another way of looking at a sentence, in a sense, would be to see these as containers. I like to say these are like containers that can be filled with different things. And this would be the modifying, this little thing hanging off the subject and direct object, that would be the modifier container. And that can be filled, as we're going to see, that can be filled with different things. Usually, and this is true in many languages, but especially Greek, usually when you learn a word or a grammatical item like adjective or an article or whatever, is to realize they can often function in various ways. They can fill different containers in the sentence. And so if this little branch hanging off the subject and direct object, if that branch is a modifier container that serves to modify a noun in the sentence, one of the things that can fill that container is an adjective. Likewise, but we'll see the adjective can do other things as well. Likewise, if you have a branch coming off the verb and see that as a modifying container, something that can modify, describe, further explain the action in the verb, that container can be filled with an adverb. And we'll see there are other things that can fill that container as well that we'll look at later. So that, just at a start, for a starting point, at a basic level, that's kind of how adjectives and adverbs contribute to the sentence. So they play a role in filling out the content of the clause, of the sentence, by further describing the nouns and further describing the verbal activities in a clause. Without adjectives and adverbs, sentences could tend to be rather flat. But the adverbs and adjectives kind of, I like to see them as adding color to and adding further force and descriptive, adding to the descriptive nature of the clause. Now, we'll start with adjectives. When it comes to adjectives, there are basically three ways that an adjective can function. And again, we'll kind of use this model or this image, this kind of symbolic representation of the sentence to help us to see how the adjective can fill different containers in the clause. So when it comes to adjectives, one of the most common function of an adjective is to modify another noun. That is, again, if I have a subject or a direct object in a sentence, the adjective will function to modify that substantive, that noun, whether it's the subject or direct object or whatever. It doesn't matter. The adjective can modify another substantive. And that is known in most grammars as the attributive function of the adjective. You can kind of see it as attributing a quality to the noun that it modifies. And within that, even within the attributive position, the attributive use of the adjective, adjective will modify another noun, there are at least three different kind of positions or way that it can do it. Number one is you might have this kind of a construction. You could have an article. And the key, let me stop and say, the key to understanding the function of the adjective is the article. And that's one of the reasons we dealt with the article in the last lecture, because it plays a key role in adjectives, understanding participles, and some other parts of speech. But the article plays a key role in identifying the function of an adjective. And so one possible structure is to have an article followed by an adjective, and then followed by the noun that the adjective modifies. So article, adjective, substantive. The key with the attributive use of the adjective is the article will always encompass the adjective. That is, you'll find that the article always comes before the adjective. And we're going to see sometimes the noun will have one, at other times it might not. But the key is the article will always encompass, the adjective will fall within the article's presence and function. So article, adjective, noun. So I might have something like, I'll use this phrase to illustrate a number of usages. I might have the good man, ha-agathos on air. Now notice here's your adjective, here's your article ha, and it immediately precedes the adjective agathos, and then your noun, in this case without the article, your noun on air. And we translate that the good man. So that's one possible kind of position or arrangement of article, adjective, and noun that you'll find. Another one is, and this is still under the attributive use of the adjective, another one is article, noun, article, adjective. So now you have the article preceding, there's your article, the article preceding both the noun and the adjective. For example, I could say ha on air, ha agathos. So there's my article, rough breather. There's my article, noun, article, adjective. And I would translate it the same way in English, the good man. In English, we, unlike some other languages, in English, the adjective tends to always come before the noun that it modifies when we speak. So we wouldn't say the man, the good. We would just say the good man. And we'd only use the article once in the translation. So under the attributive, all of these are going to be translated the same way, even though in Greek there are different arrangements of how the article, the noun, and the adjective are positioned. And then a third one that you'll find in the New Testament, still under the attributive use of the adjective, is noun, article, adjective. So there's your article, and notice, again, the article still comes right before the adjective. In this case, the noun comes first, but it lacks an article. Yet, we would still translate it the same way in English. So I might say, again, on air, ha agathos. Again, I would still translate it just like the other two, the good man, just because that's the way we do it in English. But this is a third option as far as the arrangement and the position. But in all three of these examples of the attributive use of the adjective is always preceded by the article. Whether wherever it occurs in this arrangement or whether the noun has it or not. And again, you'll translate them all in the same way, the good man in this illustration, or the good person or the good woman, the good disciple, the good prophet, whatever the noun is. So that is the attributive use of the adjective. A second use of the adjective is what is known as the predicate use. The predicate use of the adjective. And in this case, the adjective, the key to identifying it is the adjective will not be preceded by the article. And so you will just have the adjective, while it's still modifying a noun. In this case, there is no article before it. In a couple of examples, the noun itself might have an article, but the key is the adjective will not have an article preceding it. And that's what distinguishes it from number one, the attributive. In this case, the adjective will lack the article, and usually you will insert in your translation, insert the word is. So if I had... to use the same words, I could translate this, the man is good. And it's called the predicate construction because, at least in English, we insert the word is in the translation. And probably a slightly different force, a slightly different emphasis than number one, the attributive position. But in both cases, the adjective is modifying the noun in the attributive and the predicate, but we would translate this slightly differently. A third use of the adjective is what is known as the substantive. Substantive use of the adjective. This is where the adjective actually functions as a noun. And usually it will be preceded by an article, but it won't modify another noun in the sentence. So I might just have ha agathos. Notice there's no aner or anthropos that it modifies. All you have is the adjective. In this case, the adjective is actually functioning to fill the container of a noun in a sentence. So it could be the subject, it could be the direct object, it could be the indirect object of a sentence. And the case, remember our discussion of cases, the case will determine that, whether it's nominative or accusative or dative indirect object or a genitive showing possession or source or descriptive or whatever, any of the functions of the genitive. So the key is, it will normally have the article with it, but there won't be another noun that it modifies. And it will actually fill, again, to use the example, instead of filling the modifier container, to use a little branch as it come off, it will actually fill the noun container in a clause. It'll be the subject or the direct object or, again, indirect object or whatever as determined by the case. So that is the substantive use of the adjective, ha agathos. The article, when we discussed articles in the last lecture, we said one of the common functions of the article in Greek is to turn virtually anything into a substantive. It can turn almost any part of speech into a substantive. And here's an example of that, where it demonstrates that the adjective is functioning as a noun, hence the substantive use of it. A fourth function of the adjective, and the last one that we'll talk about, is probably not as common, but just to show you again how in Greek, and this is true in other languages as well, but in Greek, a given grammatical item can function in a variety of ways. So the adjective we've seen, it can function attributively to modify another noun. It can actually function as a noun. But now, again, to use this kind of model again, the branch that comes off the verb, this is the modifier container, the verb modifier container, an adverb. An adjective can also fill that at times. An adjective can sometimes, not as commonly as the other functions, but an adjective can sometimes fill the verb modifier. It can act like an adverb. The other feature of adjectives to be aware of, and again, adjectives play a key role in adding color to, adding descriptive feature to a discourse. And often the piling up of adjectives, the piling up of adverbs can sometimes function to kind of slow a discourse down and draw attention to something. But another feature of adjectives to keep in mind is how adjectives draw comparisons. Now, by that I mean this. Adjectives sometimes, and this is true just to give an English example, I might say, that was the best meal I've ever had. Or be more specific, I might say, which I did the other day, that was the best hamburger I've ever eaten. Notice that word best. That basically what I'm doing, I'm comparing that hamburger I just ate to all the hamburgers I've eaten. And I said, it is the best. So I'm describing that hamburger with an adjective, but I've used what grammarians might call a superlative construction. That is, when you compare three or more things to each other, that's known as a superlative. If I'm comparing only two things, I might say, that book is better than the one I just read. I'm just comparing two. And that word better, that would be a comparative construction. I'm comparing two things. So Greek has three levels when it comes to comparison. One is just known as the positive view or positive function of adjectives. That is when an adjective is just describing a noun. So basically the attributive adjective that we looked at. If I say that was a great book. Great is just a positive use. I'm not comparing it with others. I'm just describing that book. That was a great book. The comparative use of the adjective in Greek, as I've just said, is when two things are compared. Again, I might say, this book is better than that one. Usually, although this is not always the case, often the ending, the positive just takes the normal endings that you learned with adjectives and nouns, os, u, o, on, oi, on, ois, us. Remember those endings? The comparative often will take teros. And again, that os, teros, teru, tero, but that will be the ending that will show comparison frequently. And Sometimes Greek has will have an adjective that has a comparative form all by itself. It doesn't necessarily take that ending, but most adjectives you can add a form of teros to it to indicate comparison. Two things are being compared, and then what is known as the superlative use. This is where three or more things are being compared. Again, if I say, we'll look at this text in just a moment, the greatest of these is love, from 1 Corinthians 13. Well, in the context, Paul's discussing three things: faith, hope, and love, the so-called Christian triad. And so in the context of discussing faith, hope, and love, now he says the greatest of these three is love. So he's comparing love to the other two things. So whenever three or more things are being compared, you have a superlative use of the adjective. And then this one, the superlative use also has what grammarians call an elative use, E-L-A-T-I-V-E, an elative use that basically is not explicitly comparing it to, you know, three or more things, but often you'll translate it very. So this was a very good book, we might say in English, or this was a very superb book. That would be the elative use of the superlative adjective, where again it doesn't appear that it's explicitly comparing three or more things, but there's an elative idea of this is a very good, or this is a very superb book, or insert whatever object you're talking about. The superlative often, the ending is tatas, and again this os at the end. Again, I'm repeating some things that from first year Greek. This os would form like the endings you learn with nouns: os, u, o, on, oion, ois, us, a, ace, a, ain, I, own, ice, os with feminine, etc. So those again, some adjectives, or Greek does have some adjectives that it's like they take a different form when it comes to the superlative, but those are the, when they do take endings, those are the ones you're looking for. Now, you were waiting for that. There's exceptions, of course, as there are in any language. Sometimes these can do double duty. For example, sometimes a positive adjective can be used to draw a comparison. Sometimes a comparative adjective with a comparative ending can be used to compare in a superlative way, to compare three or more things. For example, the passage that I just mentioned from 1 Corinthians 13. But the greatest of these is love. At the very end of that chapter, kind of Paul's encomium on love in the context of the use of spiritual gifts where they're being abused in the Corinthian church. Paul says in verse 13, "Now there remains faith, hope, and love, pistis, elpis, and agape." So clearly he's talking about three things. These three things, and he even says it, "but the greatest of these is love." And the word that Paul uses is maidzone. Maidzone is a comparative adjective. It's one of those adjectives that doesn't take teros, but its form, it has its own form. Maidzone means greater. It's comparative. It's used to compare two things. But here, Paul clearly is comparing three things. So here's an example of the comparative adjective used as a superlative to compare three things. So the upshot of this is ultimately you want to start with, you know, the normal endings, os, u, o, on, that are attached to adjectives. You want to look for teros and tatos, or adjectives that have their own form, like maidzone. At least start with that, but then obviously you want to pay attention to the context to determine, are two things being compared, or are three or more things being compared? Or is there no explicit comparison, and it's more of an elative idea when it comes to superlative? So you want to pay close attention to the context to determine what level of comparison. And again, it's not just that anything goes in this case, and you're just going to find all kinds of confusion. Usually, Greek will follow positive comparative with teros, superlative with tatos, but just be aware that that's just how language works sometimes. The more you use it, it's users that determine how the language works and how it's used. And so Greek was happy to allow some of these to do double duty and for there to be some crossover between these three functions, but or four functions. So these are the main functions in addition to determining attributive, predicate, substantive. When it comes to attributive use of the adjective, you want to also pay attention to what level of comparison is being indicated. Is it just a straightforward positive use of the adjective, or is there comparison or a superlative idea indicated by the endings but ultimately by the context? So again, adjectives play an important role in filling out the discourse, in adding descriptive feature, sometimes slowing the discourse down, and providing important information that helps us fill out the mental picture that we form when we read a text and when we read the discourse. The other feature that I want to discuss briefly is the adverb. And I won't spend as much time on this one, but like adjectives, adverbs also play a key role in filling out some of the details of the text and giving us further descriptive features. Usually by filling the verb modifier container. So again, if the subject, verb, and direct object can be seen as kind of containers in the sentence, this little branch or leg off of the verb, it represents a verb modifying container. And the adverb is a popular, common way of filling that, to modify the verb. Adverbs tend to be fixed forms, that is, they won't take different endings. Like adjectives take the same ending that is present in the noun it modifies, in attributive adjectives, for example, or the ending that's required. If it's functioning like a noun, an adjective will take the ending that's required by the context, whether it's singular or plural, and whether it's dative or accusative or nominative or whatever case will be determined by how it functions in the sentence. Not so with adverbs. They tend to be more fixed in form. Now, one thing we've seen then already is, interestingly, at least three different grammatical items can fill the verb modifier container. We've already seen that a noun in the accusative case, for example, can. Remember we talked about the adverbial accusative that can show time or extent or manner. So a noun in the accusative case could fill that. An adjective, not as commonly, but once in a while, an adjective can function like an adverb. We saw that in the first part of this lecture. But now, a more common feature that you find filling the verb modifier container would be an adverb. So, to use an English example, if I were to say, she studied Greek diligently. Diligently would be your adverb modifying studied in that case. And so that's a common function of the adverb in Greek. The adverb can demonstrate, or the adverb, one way I think to analyze them or to think about them in Greek is to focus on, well, what meaning is communicated by the adverb. So, for example, at least in Greek, and probably this is true in other languages as well, one common way an adjective can function is to indicate manner, how something is done. In that sentence, that English sentence, she studied Greek diligently. Diligently seems to indicate the manner in which she studied. Extent. Answering the question, if this is answering the question how, this would, how far, or maybe even how much, would be adverbs that indicate extent. Another common one would be time. And adverbs that indicate how long. Adverbs that clearly have a temporal idea notion to them. So these would be three very common uses of the adverb. When it comes to adverbs, obviously we can't go through a lot of them or go through all of them. But with adverbs, what you want to do is rely on a reliable lexicon like BDAG, the larger BDAG lexicon, that will give you further help in defining and coming to grips with the meaning of the adverb. But the point, again, is that the adverb usually functions to fill the verb modifier container. Now, one function of the adverb we've already seen is that adverbs can function as nouns sometimes or substantively, usually when they're preceded by an article. We gave an example from Colossians chapter 3 and verse 1, where Paul commanded his readers, seek the things above, which was ta ano. Now, ano is an adverb, above. But the article before it, the ta, turns it into a substantive. So it's actually functioning in Colossians 3:1. I'll write that reference up there. It's actually functioning as the direct object of the imperative seek. Zeleta, I think it is, and the things above. And so we translate it, the word above, we insert the word the things in English to make it turn it kind of into a noun. But the function of the article is to turn that adverb into a noun. I wouldn't say that's a real common function of the adverb in the Greek New Testament, but it is one possible usage of it. But more commonly, you'll find it filling the verb modifier container within the sentence. So adjectives and adverbs, don't overlook them. Don't draw more exegetical conclusions from them than you should, but don't overlook them. Again, they play a key role in filling out descriptive feature, in describing the different features of the text, the different characters in the text, and the different verbal activities. And they give us important information for filling out the verbal picture that in our minds that we create when we read a text. And hopefully these categories will help you navigate most of, and certainly the more significant usage of adjectives and adverbs in the Greek New Testament.
This is Dr. David Mathewson in his teaching on third semester Greek. This is session number 5, Adjectives and Adverbs.